Welcome in PZ85 Sports on your Podzilla 1985 network. Cody Sandusky, thank you for joining us this morning. It is June 11th, 2016, and to be frank with you, it's going to be a mixed bag of emotions today on PZ85 Sports for a variety of reasons and for the topics that we have on hand. Just to give you a preview of what may be an hour episode, we'll kind of sit tight and see how the recording goes because, of course, as I record these, I don't know what the time frame is going to be, but I do know what we're going to talk about today. And in no small part, it will be given some more elaboration for the opening of last week's episode. Again, last week's episode was recorded on Friday night, which was before we knew that Muhammad Ali had passed away. I recorded a cold open to set off the shows. I wanted it to be acknowledged that we knew he had passed away and to share some thoughts. And for this week, there's been a lot of different commemorations. Of course, he has now been laid to rest in his final resting place in Louisville. The multi-faith ceremony at the KFC Yum Center happened yesterday, so that has been taken care of, and the news surrounding that has been, you know, nothing but great for what had happened at that event and for what Muhammad Ali wanted from that event. But we're going to see some other things being discussed in this episode about him, including the Sports Illustrated that came out this week dedicated almost solely to him and some of my favorite quotes from something he wrote for the magazine just around 50 years ago. Also going to acknowledge the passing and talk about Gordie Howe, Mr. Hockey. And yes, as some people like to share, Wayne Gretzky may be the greatest hockey player that ever played, and he is considered the great one, but even he acknowledges that Gordie Howe is his Mr. Hockey. He is the greatest to ever live. And stats, you know, NHL.com released an article that noted that Howe, with his scoring statistics, was the best ever, even beyond what, you know, comparisons you can make to Wayne Gretzky. And even Wayne Gretzky just says, no matter what, he was the Wayne Gretzky to Wayne Gretzky. That was Gordie Howe. So we'll discuss Mr. Hockey a little bit. We'll also jump into the tale of two journalists between Ariel Helwani and the young lady from Fox Sports Florida. That would be Emily Austin. We'll discuss her appearance on Barstool Sports and what has turned out to be probably her last appearance on a major news site for a little while in terms of being discussed as a sports journalist. We may or may not. It depends. We have hit on it a lot over this last week of episodes here on Podzilla 1985. I feel like most of our members of the network have discussed their thoughts and their feelings on the Brock Turner situation. I don't know if there's anything I can quite add that really changes the discussion or really changes the topic. If anything, that whole situation confirms a few things I've talked about on this podcast in times past, whether it be recent or since we've started doing it consistently in February. It is the entitlement situation that happens with athletes. Now, mind you, the news in sports on that side is that USA Swimming did come out and officially ban him from ever joining the organization. Now, he wasn't a member of the organization at the time of the sexual assault at Stanford, but this kind of determines that he will never be allowed to swim in the Olympics, which was his ultimate goal. And, you know, I don't know how much I want to or can get into this. It's been interesting to say the least, and I don't know how to broach the topic, really. It's frustrating, it's infuriating. I know Jesse talked about earlier this week that it's something that just enrages him, and he hasn't dove into a lot of the coverage about it. I've read the victim statement. I read Brock's character statements from his father and one of his friends from school, as well as his statement that came out exclusively through The Guardian late this week. So we may or may not jump into that. We may also have some time for UFC conversations. Of course, Brock Lesnar making his return at UFC 200. That has officially been announced. He will be fighting Mark Hunt, the Super Samoan. It's going to be a nice contrast of styles between someone who is comfortable taking people down in Brock Lesnar and a man who swings and kicks for the knockout in Mark Hunt, a guy who fought in K1 previously, Pride Fighting Championships before it was absorbed by UFC. 42 years old, but the guy has experience under his belt and is a hard hitter. And note, if we don't get into that, we will jump into that in future episodes because, of course, UFC 200 is next month and we will do a preview episode of that. May bring in Asa or Tanner or some other people just to see who we can have discuss this UFC pay-per-view, the big 200. But without further ado, we'll jump in. Muhammad Ali, again, passing away this past week. I guess it was 1 week ago, late Friday night in Phoenix at 74 years old. An outpouring of love and appreciation from throughout the sports world and throughout the world as a whole. You know, as I talked about on that opening of the podcast and maybe just a little bit in last week's episode, Muhammad Ali doesn't just represent a transcendent figure in sports in terms of his swagger, his determination, his fuel, how he carried himself, his personality being larger than life. You know, we say that about a lot of athletes that their personality is larger than life, or this guy is a character beyond life. Muhammad Ali lived that and may very well have been one of the first few to do that in sports in general. And something, an excerpt, I'm going to read from Sports Illustrated this week. They ended their magazine with an article that he wrote in part in 1964, right before his fight with Sonny Liston, when he was then known as Cassius Clay. That kind of goes into that a little bit. We'll jump into it. But for Muhammad Ali, he is not just a figure in the sports world. He is a figure in this world of social awareness and standing up for personal rights. And good, bad, or indifferent, what you may think about the man's efforts to avoid the Vietnam War or to not want to participate in the conflict due to his religious beliefs, he was someone who stood firm on his religious beliefs, and not only that, but was very vocal at a time where the civil rights movement was going on and was starting to gain traction. Now, mind you, some people say he wasn't necessarily a figure of the civil rights movement. I would disagree. I would say this is a man who was a figure of the civil rights movement for multiple reasons, in no small part due to his discussion, his frank discussion, about being pushed into going to war when his country didn't care about him. And he was very poignant about these conversations on a college campus, on multiple interviews, discussing the fact that he did not feel it was right or his place to go fight a war against people who did nothing wrong to him, and yet U.S. citizens were the ones not providing him justice or providing him security or providing him safety in the nation that he was from. He was very direct about his accusations or his statements. I say accusations because some people took them as such, but let's be honest. Late 1960s in the United States, a black man wasn't very welcome in some places still yet, and especially one who professed the faith of Islam. That's not something that was as prevalent, or at least if not as prevalent, very well received at that time. Heck, you look now, it's still not well received. But at that juncture for him, it was a multitude of things that would have seen him frowned upon or looked down upon by the majority of the United States and its citizens. And for him to be so bold as to state plainly his thought, his problems about what was going on and what was the source of his disgruntled nature toward everything, was very bold, very, very new to the time for an athlete. Now, mind you, we'd had Jesse Owens in the previous years, or maybe in future years. I'm trying to remember exactly when that Olympics happened, but social statements by athletes were still a new thing. They may be so far as to be taboo at that point. And even now, some people still have a divide. And, should athletes be involved in social campaigns, social programs? Should they be a figure for whatever organization or thought process they have, or should they focus and be just the person on the field playing their sport? And, there's merits and conversations to be had on both sides of that, whether or not an athlete should be involved in social discussions or not. I personally think they should. And Muhammad Ali is the template of who, what you can do if you are on that platform, if you're given that platform, what changes you can make or what discussions you can have. And of course, that opinion changing of him throughout time and after his Parkinson's disease diagnosis, and you saw that rage on in his life, unfortunately ended up playing a part in his passing at 74 years old. It was a respiratory infection, a respiratory problem exacerbated by his Parkinson's disease. So Muhammad Ali, again, I talked last week. There have been plenty of commentators, plenty of sports media members who have discussed in depth about their time watching Ali, because in a lot of sports news and a lot of sports radio and magazines like Sports Illustrated, a lot of these men were able to see Muhammad Ali live in person, whether it be his fights as Cassius Clay so far back as 61, 62, 64, or his medal at the Olympics. He won a gold medal as a light heavyweight for the U.S. in 1960. Or if it's his later fights, his second comeback in 1980, where he had his last three fights, devastating losses, or if it was just seeing him closer to where my time frame would be, seeing him carry the torch to light the Olympic torch at Atlanta in 1996. There are people that have more understanding, more awareness, more experience than I about Muhammad Ali and his life and what it meant. But as an outsider, maybe as a youth learning about sports and the impact athletes can have, and the impact people can have with such large platforms to discuss their social causes, to discuss the plights of society and maybe improve things, Muhammad Ali showed he was not one to be afraid of that platform or one to be intimidated by that platform. And that's something that I know the sports world and the world as a whole is going to miss very greatly concerning Muhammad Ali. I'm going to go into this magazine article. It's called Why I Roared. And again, this was written by Muhammad Ali when he was still known as Cassius Clay. This was written and published in the February 24th, 1964 issue of Sports Illustrated. This is a week before he became the world heavyweight champion. And it's an abridged version. I'm not going to read all of it. It's very interesting because it discusses kind of his mindset in being this braggadocious person that he was. And maybe really his thoughts on fighting. And I'll just dive in with a little bit here. This is about partway through the current edition of it, or the abridged version. I've said some pretty insulting things about Liston, but I've done that mostly to get people talking about the fight. I actually have a certain amount of respect for him. He's the champion, isn't he? When I see him staring at me with that mean, hateful look, I want to laugh. But then I think maybe it's not so funny. I'm pretty sure the way he acts is just a pose, the same way I have a pose. When I get a crowd around me, someone always wants to know if I'm really like the way I act. Well, of course, or else I wouldn't act this way. But what I have done is exaggerate the natural way I am. I wouldn't sit around my house shouting and carrying on if it was just me and my folks, but I would if there was anyone else there to hear me. I do that to attract attention. I don't really love to fight, you see, but as long as I'm doing it, I sure don't want to do it for free. The fame and pride of doing something real well, like being the world champion, is a pretty nice thing to think about sometimes, but the money I'm making is nice to think about all the time. I remember one day in Louisville as I was riding a bus reading in the paper about Floyd Patterson and Ingmar Johansson. It was right after I'd won the Olympic gold medal in Rome and had turned professional, and I was confident then that I could beat either one of them if I had the chance. But I knew I wouldn't get the chance because no one much had ever heard of me. I said to myself, how am I going to get a crack at the title? I knew I'd have to start talking about it. I mean, really talking, screaming and yelling and acting like some kind of nut. I would be like Gorgeous George, the wrestler, who got so famous by being flashy and exaggerating everything and making people notice him. You can see how it has turned out, just the way I wanted it to. I started off slow because I was feeling my way, but pretty soon I caught on to what reporters like to hear. I told this man I was going to knock that boy down in the sixth round, and then I did. I said I am the greatest, I am a ball of fire. If I didn't say it, there was nobody going to say it for me. And pretty soon, other people were saying, I'm the greatest. And I said, didn't I tell you in the first place? And it goes on, kind of preparing toward the end. And this is the last paragraph of that article in this abridged version. Quote, folks ask me what I'll do if I beat Liston and what I'll do if I don't. But I don't have the answer yet. I'm not too worried. I think I can make it in something else the same way I've made it in boxing. If things go wrong in the fight, I'll just wait for a while. Summertime comes, flowers start blooming, little birds start flying, and you wake up, get up, and get out. You change with the times. And I know we mentioned it, or I mentioned it in the opening of last week's show and kind of in that episode that I mentioned Gorgeous George and Nature Boy Buddy Rogers, kind of the emulation. This was the quote I was trying to remember, and thankfully Sports Illustrated published it. That was Muhammad Ali. He adopted this persona or this exaggeration, and of course for many of us here at PZ85, we're fans of wrestling, or, you know, enjoy professional wrestling in some form or another. So it's always talked about when characters are developing for television. It's like, oh yeah, this is an exaggeration of who I am. This is who I am, just turned up to 12 or 15. Muhammad Ali acknowledged he did the same exact thing. Or at that point, Cassius Clay acknowledged he did the same exact thing. It was his persona. It was his personality just turned up on overdrive to grab people's attention, to foster the opportunities that he then took advantage of being a three-time world heavyweight champion, including that first one coming by a knockdown of Sonny Liston in 1964. So, and Muhammad Ali, he summed it up best, maybe in a prophetic way he didn't understand at the time, was that you change with the times. And, you know, right after that fight with Sonny Liston where he won the title, he changed his name to Muhammad Ali and professed and claimed Islam as his faith. And, you know, no truer words being spoken than that moment where he acknowledged, you change with the times. And he did change with the times for the better. In his instance, because of his social causes and his awareness and drive to promote well-needed attention toward causes like Parkinson's disease, like maybe being a conscientious objector, to war, kind of living your faith in person and whether the conflict comes or not from other people. So Muhammad Ali passing away at 74. I gave my regards last week. I do again to the Ali family and all those that mourn. And then this week in Louisville, those who joined to celebrate. Very tongue-tied episode this week. But those who joined to celebrate the life of Muhammad Ali and kind of his one final pass through the city that he was a native of and always claimed. He was a child of Louisville. He was a lifetime Louisville citizen. according to many of those down in Louisville, Kentucky. So that was a great life lived and great things to acknowledge this week. And also for Gordie Howe, much the same way. We switched from boxing to hockey, and it's a very interesting time right now in sports. And other people have acknowledged it on different forms of social media, especially Reddit, addressing that. It's interesting to see two of the greats in their respective sports, two of the greatest to ever participate in their respective sports, passing away within the same week or within the same time frame. You know, Muhammad Ali at 74, Gordie Howe passing away yesterday at age 88, yesterday being June 10th, 2016, at 88 years old. And of course, Gordie Howe battling dementia. He lost his wife a few years ago to dementia. He's been waning over these last few years. He was able to attend one hockey game, I believe, this season for the Detroit Red Wings. He was there in person at the event. And I believe it was a celebration of his career and his life. And for Gordie Howe, it's much the same way. I don't necessarily have as many things to share about Gordie Howe, not being able to watch his competitions live. I've seen clips, of course. Being a fan of sports, you like to seek out those who are the best at their respective sports. And for Gordie Howe, he was, for 25 seasons, the face of the Red Wings. He is, of course, you know, probably the greatest place on the greatest place, greatest player to ever play for the Detroit Red Wings. A man who left the NHL for a little bit of time to help the World Hockey Association gain its traction, of course, giving him the opportunity to get that organization, get that league off the ground, and in no small part maybe had helped those teams that made their way into the NHL later. It was a chance for some of those teams. You know, some people moved over. It was Gordie Howe played for the WHA. Bobby Hull played for the WHA. And then it brought in some teams such as the Winnipeg Jets, the Edmonton Oilers, the Whalers, the Nordiques. Teams that, of course, in the 80s for the Oilers became a dynasty. And, of course, had some of the better players in NHL history go through, including your Mark Messier and, of course, the great one, Wayne Gretzky. And I discussed at the top of the show, Gordie Howe is considered Mr. Hockey. He's a 23-time All-Star. He held a lot of the sports scoring records, actually the vast majority of them, until they were broken by Wayne Gretzky. Still holds records for the most games and the most seasons played. He actually shot ambidextrously. He was a right winger for most of his career. Again, started in 1946 playing with the Red Wings. He retired in 1971. Think about that. Then he came back, he played in the WHA 2 years after he retired. He was already in the Hockey Hall of Fame at that point. He scored over 100 points twice in 6 years. He was in the mid-40s playing for the Houston Aeros with his sons, Mark and Marty. And he played one season with the Hartford Whalers before retiring at the age of 52. He played in the 1979-1980 season, which means he competed in the NHL in five different decades. And of course, you can't acknowledge Gordie Howe without the Gordie Howe hat trick, which is something, oddly enough, he only did twice in his career. But a Gordie Howe hat trick, in case you're not a huge fan of hockey or haven't heard it, a Gordie Howe hat trick is a goal, an assist, and a fight in the same game. And for some people, that's a bit hard to make all three of those things happen, because it's a little difficult to be a great goal scorer as well as get into a fight, because most people who are great on the scoring end or the passing end don't necessarily get involved in scraps. Sometimes it happens. Gordie Howe was only did it twice in his career. Somehow he adopted that nickname of it, the namesake of that one. It's kind of fun to have that, and kind of fun to see who has achieved these kinds of things in their career. And you see some great names on these lists, like Rick Touche, Brendan Shanahan, Brian Suter. All have 17 for Shanahan and Suter, 18 for Rick Touche. It's kind of fun just to acknowledge these things and see the fun that can be had just acknowledging and respecting someone's impact on a sport that way. It's such a unique accomplishment. But also, of course, the NHL Lifetime Achievement Award recipient, the inaugural recipient in 2008. Gordie Howe, as we mentioned, Gordie Howe, the face of the sport for decades almost. And the face of the sport for a man who is now the face of the sport. It's an interesting dynamic to see. Mr. Hockey, Gordie Howe, was the Wayne Gretzky to Wayne Gretzky. Of course, Wayne Gretzky had every opportunity saying, yes, he is the greatest player of all time, being Gordie Howe. Wayne Gretzky. Someone who owns all these scoring records and things like that. continues to elevate Gordie Howe beyond himself, which one is very commendable for someone who in many rights and ways deserves recognition as the greatest player in his sports history, and yet continues to pass that buck and pass that title on to Gordie Howe, who by no doubt in anyone's mind deserves that kind of recognition. For Gordie Howe, it was, you know, an everyday guy. He grew up in Floral, Saskatchewan, or he moved to Saskatchewan in Saskatchewan at an early age. So kind of growing up in rural Canada, making a way for himself and kind of becoming a child of Detroit by the way of his playing for the Red Wings for so many years. And kind of going on and battling at a time where it felt pretty combative in hockey. You know, the gear wasn't the way it was, different things. There weren't helmets really worn. I don't actually know if Gordie Howe ever wore a helmet in his entire career, because when he played, obviously they either weren't around or they weren't required. And he's a man who has made a profound impact on his sport. And as I said, it's an interesting time when two of the greatest athletes of their generation kind of, you know, they pass away. Their time has come to an end on this earth, and it's time to recognize. And it's kind of in awe of some of these great accomplishments, maybe things you forgot, or maybe just this widespread amount of love for these two athletes. And there was an illustration, and I wish I knew which paper it was from so I could give proper credit. I've only seen it floating around in social media. And it's just an image of boxing gloves. Let's see if I can find it for sure. I don't know who it was in, but the Gleaner, I believe, is what the attribution on the image. Excuse me, it's a cartoon. It's just, you know, a simple drawing. Ali's gloves hanging, and there's a placard above it that says the greatest. And of course, you see the Ali name on the gloves. And then you see the brown hockey gloves right next to it with Howe's name and white on it. And all the placard says above is ditto. So I know I've gone off for about 22 minutes in this opening. That's where we're at right now. But I feel like due time needs to be given to both of these men for you know, a variety of reasons. Again, their willingness to help their community, their willingness to be a face for their sport, and to essentially, by their own drive, by their own actions, the greatest, if not in their generation or in their time, both being one of the greatest at their respective sports of all time. So, Gordie Howe passing away at 88, Muhammad Ali passing away at 74. A very, very tough week in terms of losses in the sports world due to their great contributions to sports and other means in the world. You're listening to PZ85 Sports and your Podzilla 1985 network. Cody Sandusky here with you. We're going to transition into maybe a little bit more of a comical discussion, maybe laughing through the anger, so to speak. I dubbed it on my Facebook page, my personal page, you know, Cody Sandusky. And of course, you can find me at Cody Sandusky on Twitter. You can find us at Podzilla1985.com. I have a page I'm working on, as I mentioned in last week's episode, for Cody Sandusky Sports. You can go to Facebook.com/Cody Sandusky Sports. You'll be able to find it, hopefully getting some images up there so I can make it more active, share my thoughts on topics on there, share maybe previews, and maybe have some questions or conversations for each week's episode of PZ85 Sports and whatever else I'm involved in. But it's a tale of two journalists in this case. And we talked about it a bit earlier in the week. Asa, he mentioned on the Pro Wrestling Unscripted episode that he had talked to me about it last week, if I didn't mind him discussing the Ariel Helwani and UFC situation. And I have no qualms with it. Again, by no means wasn't worried about anybody stepping on toes. I'm glad they covered it, because for them, both being Shannon and Asa UFC fans, or at least MMA fans in part, they were able to discuss it and covered a lot of the bases. And I'm very glad they did. But we will cover that a little bit. And a couple days ago, I actually provided some fodder to discuss, actually yesterday, to be honest with you, on June 10th, some other fodder to maybe compare Ariel Helwani to, and kind of the tale of two journalists, as I've dubbed it. We'll start with the Ariel Helwani side of things. In case you missed it, Ariel Helwani, the lead writer for MMAfighting.com, is a blog on affiliated with SB Nation, of course, the conglomerate website that has host hundreds, if not maybe 1,000, sports blogs of different tilts. Of course, different teams have their thing. MMA Fighting is a big part of that. Ariel Helwani, 5 years in a row, from 2010 to 2015, the MMA Journalist of the Year. Maybe the ultimate journalist in his field, covering his sport, kind of his dedication to his sport, the sources he has, the conversations he has. Very intelligent man covering his sport, very grounded in the sport. And for those of us in sports media, or me kind of breaking their way in, Ariel Helwani's the pinnacle of MMA journalism. He's the guy you look to if he has a story, he's the one you read first because he is so grounded in the sport and understands it so well. Ariel Helwani was at the UFC 199 event last weekend, and before the main event happened with Bisping, there was an article released by him that mentioned that Brock Lesnar was going to be on the UFC 200 card, opponent to be determined. What happened after that was a bit of a controversial situation, to say the least. He was approached by a couple PR people for the UFC saying that Dana White wanted to meet with him. He said, no, not right now. The main event's about to start. I want to see Bisping and Rockhold. Number two, by the way. So they come back later and say, there is no option. There's no discussion. You're coming back. You're meeting with Dana. He brought one of his fellow journalists, I believe it was his photographer, his videographer, with him. They come through. Dana White in a rage. He said he was very, Helwani, his first person account, said he was very red in the face and said, we don't want you here. You're no longer welcome here. Go to Bellator if you want to cover stuff. Lorenzo doesn't like you. You're very negative. And Ariel said that it was a bit of an uncomfortable situation, but that his press coverage, his press credentials, was going to be revoked by the UFC. He would be no longer welcome to cover it with press credentials. Dana White said during that time that he could come to an event. He would have to buy a ticket, though. So Ariel Helwani, greatest journalist for the sport as a whole, is canned from covering UFC events with credentials because of his breaking of the Brock Lesnar story before it was shown in a reveal video for UFC 200, a hype video, more or less, by the UFC. Fast forward a couple days. Now, mind you, this goes on Sunday, Monday. Monday, he was on, he did the run across all of really sports media. He was on the Dan Patrick Show in the morning. He was on SportsCenter that night, or maybe been Sunday night. I think it was Monday night with Scott Van Pelt. This big thing going on, and of course discussing different things and saying that he didn't think it was fair that this happened. He was just trying to cover the sport as best he knew how because he had received information from his sources and therefore he broke it. And it's completely understandable. There's no reason to doubt that. There's no reason to belittle or get a guy trouble for that. And I have some quotes pulled up from his interview with Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio. And I think some of them are very fitting about this show. And the article leading up to that says, and it has been revealed, Helwani has been reinstated. But why is reporting UFC news, even if it beats the UFC to the punch, no pun intended, a bad thing? And that's the discussion from CBS Sports. And here's the quote from Helwani. Quote, that is, I think, a question for them. I don't think it's a bad thing. I'm certainly not going to stop doing it because that's my job. I am an MMA journalist, no different from Peter King, the NFL, or Woj at Yahoo, or Adam Schefter at ESPN. Again, Peter King, NFL, and Sports Illustrated, as well as NBC, Adrian Wojnarowski at Yahoo with The Vertical, and Adam Schefter, their NFL insider for ESPN. Quote, this is a part of sports. People like to get their news from quote-unquote insiders, journalists, whatever you want to call them. They, for whatever reason, like to either announce things on their own or disseminate the news to certain partners or platforms. I get that from their standpoint, but sometimes the best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. Great reference to a poem that was a great reference in a book of Mice and Men by John Steinbeck. My job is to get the news. They keep telling us there is a big slot yet to be filled for UFC 200, a big name. So to me, that's like a flashing red light in my face. I'm going to try to find the news, or find the name, excuse me. Not because I'm being malicious or trying to be evil, but because that's my job. End quote. And he goes on to discuss it, and he goes on to discuss the situation about how he was pulled aside and what was told to him. And it actually conflicted. His report conflicted with what Joe Rogan said on his podcast. Of course, Joe Rogan, the color commentator for all UFC pay-per-view events. He's a big name in that. Also a comedian, has his own podcast. And Joe Rogan came out on his podcast and said Helwani was told by UFC officials not to announce this news. And that Helwani was warned that this would cost jobs if it happened. And here's the quote from, again, that Tiki and Tierney interview on CBS Sports Radio. Quote, well, Joe Rogan went on his podcast and said someone at the UFC told me not to put it out there because jobs will be lost as a result. That is 1,000% inaccurate. No one at the UFC ever told me that jobs would be lost if I reported news. That's kind of a ludicrous thing to say to anyone. And if I'm being honest, I'm a little disappointed that he put that out there without even talking to me. He got that from Dana White. He's a close friend of Dana White's. And Dana and some other people at the UFC believe there's a mole at the company feeding me information. That is also 1,000% inaccurate. There is no mole. There's no singular person that I planted within the company to give me news. Also a ludicrous idea. And I'll kind of carry on a little bit They seem to believe that, which to me is kind of a compliment, that they think this news is so secretive there can only be one person giving it to me. But they have to understand when they book a fight or do something that they are fighters and managers and coaches and teammates. There are a lot of people that find out this stuff, and I talk to a lot of them for various reasons every single day. That's how I find it out, through hard work, through journalism, end quote. Helwani, as I stated a little bit earlier and has been covered now, has been reinstated by the UFC, so the situation has maybe been appeased a little bit. It shouldn't have happened in the first place, though. Thankfully, Helwani's been very vocal, and thankfully due to the mainstream sports media, quote-unquote, like ESPN, CBS Sports Radio, and the like, Dan Patrick Show and others, Ariel Helwani has been given an opportunity and a platform to kind of discuss what goes on in MMA journalism and kind of show and pull back the curtain that this isn't necessarily a unique situation. And the fact that he has to say that is rather unfortunate and shows a lot of immaturity still yet on the UFC's part. The UFC, via the efforts of Dana White and the Fertitta brothers, have been trying to make this, again, the banner of MMA. And in large part, they have accomplished that. They are the number one game in MMA in terms of just promotion. You've seen others kind of fold into their brand. You've seen Strikeforce, WEC, you've seen Pride FC. These brands have come in. They've become the big dog on the block. Of course, other things like Bellator or Shamrock FC, if you're in the Missouri and the Midwest region, they're trying to catch up, but the UFC is the big dog on the block. And with that, you carry a certain responsibility to set the standard for the treatment of journalists and how you conduct yourselves on a PR level, how you carry yourselves when news breaks, good or bad. And it seems like the UFC has still failed to grasp how they should handle journalists. And it's not necessarily the most widely covered thing on the planet. And Ariel Helwani, as I said, for all intents and purposes, is the main guy. Again, MMA Journalist of the Year, 5 years in a row, from 2010 to 2015. It's not beyond the realm of possibility that it happens again, that he wins it for a sixth straight year. And you know what? He deserves it. If anything, he deserves it for the way he handled this situation. He came out very professionally in all of his media coverage. I listened to the Dan Patrick Show interview live. I was able to watch the Scott Van Pelt interview right after it happened, or the next morning. I haven't listened to the Tiki and Tierney interview, but I've read the quotes from it. Ariel Helwani handled this all with a level of class and professionalism that I think UFC should envy. And not only should envy, should emulate, and should have learned to emulate long ago. I get that Dana White is a fiery personality. Maybe he's adopted a little bit of that Muhammad Ali mindset. I need to be braggadocious and let people know, carry myself with this anger and this swagger. I feel like he's learned as much from Vince McMahon and Mark Cuban as he tries to claim to not be like Vince McMahon. He kind of is seen as this divisive figure, this angry figure sometimes in his sport. And he's not even the owner. He's basically the representative, the president of the UFC. And for him to carry himself in this manner, and in no small part due to him, I'm sure Lorenzo Fertitta did have as much to do with it as he claimed that night at UFC 199. There is something wrong with the way this was handled. And it's not professional. It's not befitting of a large sports organization. If you're trying your best to make your sport, to make your brand less of a niche interest and more of a widespread, highly respected sports organization, much like, for all intents and purposes, again, good, bad, or indifferent as all of these do, like the NBA, like the NHL, like the English Premier League, like FIFA, really bad in that case. If you want to have yourself carried in this way or have yourself shown in a positive light and shown that you are a professional organization, you need to do better than this. I get you want people to have the name of your organization in their mouths, but have it in their mouths for a good reason, not for this. And I put the blame squarely on Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta. This is something they should know, and Ariel Helwani was very open about it. You look at any sports organization across the globe, and there is coverage like this. There are people who live their lives who are dedicated as journalists to get the inside perspective, to get the news before no one else does. It's not like Ariel Helwani was speaking ill of anybody in that press release or in that article. It's not like he was trashing anything. It's not like he was printing false information either. He beat you to the punch because you wanted to make a hype video. He let people know, hey, this is what I've heard. It is almost confirmed that Brock Lesnar's going to be fighting at UFC 200. Nothing wrong with that. It's nothing new to the world of sports. And while some people maybe do it in a malicious manner or maybe in a slimy manner sometimes, Ariel Helwani's not one of those. In everything I've seen and everything I've read, he's been a very professional journalist in his efforts to make MMA look like a professional sport. You know, I say, of course, it's a professional sport. People are paid for participation, but I hope you understand what I mean in the sense of a quality organization or a quality sport to follow, something that is worth mainstream attention. And Ariel Helwani has been a large part in that gaining traction for mixed martial arts. And for the UFC to decry him, if only briefly for that, is ignorant at best, short-sighted at best, and just stupid at worst. Yes, I said it. Stupid. Dana White, Lorenzo Fertitta, even Joe Rogan for opening his mouth the way he did. Dumb. It's setting back your sport. And I get Joe Rogan is divisive, and of course Joe Rogan's never going to hear about this, but if he did, I'm sure he'd try to take me out behind the alley and beat me up. Knowing Joe Rogan, he probably could. Be that as it may. A very, very pitiful effort on the UFC to kind of to gate their information and try to take a stance where a stance was not needed. So I'm glad that it's been rectified. Ariel Helwani will have his credentials returned for any UFC event moving forward, but still very immature on everybody's part. And to go now from immaturity on other people's part to immaturity on a journalist's part. Again, the tale of two journalists or tale of two broadcasters. It's this one's fun, folks, so tune in. I don't have the audio for you. You can find it on Deadspin.com. Of course, Deadspin, owned by Gawker Media, who, as we'll mention briefly, is filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy due to the lawsuit they lost and the $140 million that is confirmed and has been, again, doled out by a judge to Hulk Hogan for that lawsuit, as we've discussed in small parts across our PZ85 shows. We'll get into that if necessary. I think you know what's going on. Deadspin retained the footage. Barstool Sports, which is I don't really know how to feel about Barstool Sports. Kind of think maybe the voice of Reddit or the voice of 4chan in a sense in sports, you know, kind of offensive, not safe for work, lots of tropes, lots of, you know, belligerent things or kind of off the wall, offensive things for some people. That's Barstool Sports. I don't really follow them. I don't listen to their podcast. I don't care to listen to it personally. They do like Facebook live broadcast each week, or at least do something where they put the video up on their Facebook page. Their daily rundown, excuse me. And their guest for their daily rundown on Thursday, this Thursday, June 9th, was Fox Sports Florida's sideline reporter for the Tampa Bay Rays and Orlando Magic, Emily Austin, A-U-S-T-E-N. Believe me, I'm sure there are already many puns flying around in comments about the situation, including Jane Austen book titles. She made a number of racist, anti-Semitic jokes, really mean things toward athletes, and is a 35-minute long broadcast. The Deadspin page has 2 minutes and 42 seconds of it on it. You can Google just Deadspin Emily Austin, the article and the video will pop up. It's not the nicest thing to listen to. Austin goes on the thing, calls Kevin Love a little B-word multiple times. I would say expletive, but, you know, whatever. Kevin Love, again, getting a concussion, did not play in Game 3 of the NBA Finals. And maybe if the only thing to her credit, acknowledged that it wasn't the concussion that she was necessarily referring to, although that doesn't really help things when you've already called somebody a little expletive multiple times. She goes on to talk about, and of course with this video being edited, it's an abridged version, so I don't quite know the build-up to it, but there's a little bit of build-up talking about, quote, she didn't even know Mexicans were that smart, unquote. She talked about how the Chinese guy is always the smartest guy in math class in reference to that Mexican being smart situation, quote unquote. And then one of the guys from Barstool Sports kind of plays the trope that he's Jewish, therefore he's stingy. And she goes on to a little bit of a thing that talks about when she worked at a restaurant in Boca and it worked with a Jewish clientele. Go listen to it. That's about the only thing I can say. I'm not going to quote anything else about it. I don't even want to quote the segment where she talked about working as a waitress in Boca and serving Jewish clientele. Even that part's a little bit not good. Not good. It went up on Facebook. It was deleted. And again, this information coming from the Deadspin article. The post on Barstool says that, quote, we, Hank probably, well, the guys from Barstool, somehow deleted the video, which was supposed to be edited for the actual show today. Someone grabbed it on Vimeo. It went up on the NBA subreddit r/NBA. And the Barstool Sports subreddit's been lit up with it as well. Decibel tried to reach out to Emily Austin's agents. They didn't return a request. And this was from about 9:30 yesterday morning. Fox Sports Florida Senior Vice President Steve Tello sent along the following statement to Deadspin. And here's probably going to be the end-all be-all of their discussion about this topic. Quote, "We were made aware that Emily Austin appeared in a social media video unaffiliated with Fox Sports in which she made insensitive and derogatory comments. She was not speaking on behalf of Fox Sports, nor do we condone any of the statements she made in the video. Emily has been advised that her comments were unacceptable, and she is not scheduled to appear on any upcoming Fox Sports Florida or Fox Sports Sun broadasts." And mind you, as I noted a little bit earlier, she is a sideline reporter for the Tampa Bay Rays, who are the MLB team, and mind you, have a little bit over half a season left. So, as it stands, it doesn't look like she's going to be on the network anymore. And if she is, it's going to be a while out yet. It's, I don't really know how to address this. It's not quite in the same way as the Muhammad Ali situation or even the Brock Turner situation. I don't know how to address this because it all seems like common sense to me as someone who puts stuff on the internet to not say racist stuff on the internet. I get on my soapbox a lot. I do. And I talk about these things. So consider this the More You Know segment for this week. We haven't had one in a couple weeks. Let's jump into the More You Know. Guys, I know that sometimes stereotypical jokes can be funny. Offensive as they may be, some people, including those that the stereotypical joke is about, find them comedic. If that's the case, keep that in private. Or, you know, don't say them on a live video that's going to be published on social media in which you, as a professional, will be tagged as a professional. The More You Know. That's about all I can say about it in terms of, I don't understand what would possess someone to think this is a good idea. First of all, I don't know what would possess someone to think it's a good idea to be on Barstool Sports. The P letter is getting really on me today. Barstool Sports. Not the shining lights in professional journalism for sports. And it's quite the antithesis to Ariel Helwani's efforts at MMAfighting.com. So that's your strike number one. Two, to call out an athlete who may not, and again, opinions about Kevin Love, they may lean that way. He doesn't seem to step up in the spotlight. He doesn't seem to play very aggressively when it's needed for him. I get that's a common complaint and common detrimental comment toward him. That's okay to think that. That's okay to even say that in a professional manner. Kind of call the guy out if you're going to be aggressive about it. Hey, you don't play tough in the big spots. Step it up or go play on the bench, which came off the bench last night for 24 minutes. That's okay. That's fine. That fits within the parameters of sports broadcast. That fits within the parameters of sports discussion. For you to go on and call a guy a little expletive multiple times, again, on a live video that's going to be posted on Facebook, in social media, where people are going to grab it. You, Barstool Sports had to know, she had to know, this footage was going to be pulled before they could ever get it down. And again, it was put on Vimeo, and now it's circulating around the internet. Deadspin has an abridged version. You don't say those things. That's just dumb. About an athlete. And then to go on and say the rest of what you did. About Latinos, about Jewish people, about Asian people, it boggles my mind. It feels like she's a sports professional. She works in the business. She had a job on a regional sports network. She isn't some kid her freshman year in college who's just trying to figure out what to and not to say on any form of broadcast. She's not new to this. Even if she was new to this, this is something that you should just understand. You don't make racial jokes. Anywhere, really. Especially somewhere where it's going to impact your career. Or where people can hear it. I don't understand how this is such a difficult concept to grasp, but then again, there's been a lot of stories in the last week or two that make me really scratch my head about wondering what were the simple things in life that were taught to me as a child and kind of how I've learned growing up aren't that simple and aren't that common to some people. Understanding personal responsibility for one's actions, it eludes a lot of people, and I will never understand how that has happened. I won't. Never have, never will. I make mistakes, not calling myself perfect by any means. I say some dumb things, hopefully not on the air. I try to avoid that very vehemently, but some dumb things kind of slip out sometimes for me. But not in such an aggressive or grandiose manner. And I try to admit when I'm wrong. We haven't heard anything from Emily Austin apologizing, as far as I know. And I can check her Twitter account real quick as we're on the air to kind of see a few things. But I just don't understand it. I don't understand how someone who is in the field of broadcasting understands the weight of her words, the weight of her actions. And kind of, you have to know what's going to impact. Now, Emily Austin hasn't tweeted since June 2nd. So, you know, there's nothing to be said. There's no apology to come out, nothing being stated about it. So I'm sure we won't hear anything from her for a while. That's all there is to it. So before we go, actually, we're probably going to wrap up there. You know, I've thought about it really long and really hard coming up to this point this week. I don't know if there's anything I can contribute to the conversation about Brock Turner and about Emily Doe, I guess is what we've dubbed her in this case from Santa Clara, that really changes the dynamic of the discussion. I don't have anything to add that's going to radically morph one's opinion or kind of how it's looked at. From a sports perspective, I mentioned it at the beginning of the show, and I'll just mention it briefly again. This is yet another screaming example, another clear example of how those who have been athletically gifted and who have grown up in maybe pristine conditions, upper-class conditions. I'm not saying being upper-class causes this problem. I'm not saying being athletic causes this problem. They're, you know, it's not a direct correlation. Although some would argue it is. You know, I'm going to say it's not, because I would hope it's not. For all that's good and holy, I hope it's not. With one or both of those things, it still needs to be paired with an understanding that what you do in life has direct impact and has extensive ramifications, whether it be for the day, the month, the year, the lifetime of both you and whomever you encounter or whomever you inflict whatever you do upon. And it seems like in the statements that have come out, whether it be his character statements from his father and his friend from high school or from him, that no one in this case outside of the victim and her family, the judge, the probation officer included, the prosecuting attorney and her family, they, and it seems like the majority of the world of people I've interacted with on social media, things I've seen, articles I've seen written, news discussions, PZ85 discussions here as well, it seems like the majority of people tend to grasp the veracity of this situation. And yet Brock Turner, his father, it seems like his family, have no clue. His statement in part came out in The Guardian yesterday, a publication from the UK. And his statements were, I don't have them in front of me, I really don't want to read them again after reading them yesterday. He blames it on alcohol and sexual promiscuity again. It further shows that the young man has no idea the weight of what he's done. He doesn't grasp the concept at all, which is terrifying that he doesn't understand it, what he's done and how he's impacted this young lady's life, her family's life, her boyfriend's life, everyone she'll ever encounter. He is impacted directly or otherwise for life. And he refuses to claim responsibility in whole or to claim them directly instead of finding a scapegoat in alcohol and sexual promiscuity and peer pressure. No. That's not it. You violated someone. Understand that. For all that is good and holy and to the deity anyone professes, understand that. And unfortunately, as the world turns, to borrow a phrase from a soap opera, it's another week. It's another story in sports about a sexual assault. This time, and I'm not going to discuss it. We'll save it for next time, maybe. We'll get into it. Wide receiver for the Philadelphia Eagles, Nelson Aguilar, has been accused of sexually assaulting a dancer at a Philadelphia strip club. Yeah. So, as much as we preach that people get it, or that we hope people get it, it shows a lot of people still don't get it. May never get it. Gosh, is that saddening. But again, you'll see it in the blurb of this podcast as it is put on Podzilla1985.com. You'll see it on iTunes, on Podcast Addict for Android. You're going to see, I noted the blurb as I typed it before this. It was going to be a variety of emotions due to the wide range of topics. And I think we've hit that over these last 50 minutes. I am Cody Sandusky. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of PZ85 Sports. Again, you can find me on Twitter at Cody Sandusky. You can follow and like Podzilla1985 on Facebook. Go to Cody Sandusky Sports on Facebook, facebook.com/CodySandusky Sports. Like that. That page will be becoming more active, more active in the next few weeks and months. Follow that. Get in early. You're going to see a lot of fun discussion, I hope, and a lot of developments for what I'm trying to do in sports media. You can go to podzilla1985.com, listen to all of our episodes this week, a great Mr. 100 and a five-star man concerning this Brock Turner topic. PWU this week was really good. Nerd Up coming up tomorrow or Monday, we'll be discussing maybe a preview of E3. We had a few more Pokemon come out through one of the magazines in Japan. They'll be discussing that, to be sure. Go ahead and find us on Patreon. Back us on Patreon at patreon.com/podzilla1985 or search podzilla1985. You can contribute funds if you so wish. We greatly appreciate everyone that does. That allows us to bring you this content and publish it as regularly as we do. Find on podzilla1985.com under the cast and crew page all of the Twitter handles for all the cast members and all the affiliated members of our group. You can also go to redbubble.com, search podzilla1985, buy the t-shirts and the apparel. We have a lot of fun stuff, including the Podzilla 1985 sports baseball tee. Definitely a fun one to pick up. But for everyone in the Podzilla 1985 family, I am Cody Sandusky saying thank you for listening to this episode of PZ85 Sports. Wherever you may be, thank you for tuning in. Remember to stay safe, stay dry and warm. Hopefully the weather's not impacting your fun summer plans. Go catch some sports this week. It's a lot of fun. High school Legion balls going on, softball's going on. I've got nieces and nephews playing a lot of sports. It's going to be a lot of fun to catch. So just get out there and enjoy sports today. Talk to you soon, guys.